Ken has been here with us many times, and he's our great friend.
Theosophy Center, Cape Town.
And it is super having here, and also the warmth that you all generate here, the vibrations in this hall. And I'm sure it's going to be
July 19th.
Very, very warm and special meeting. We are looking very forward to it, and we appreciate it, and it is arranged. Just one thing, our next meeting will be on the 2nd of August, and at 11 o'clock on Sunday. Thank you very much, and now, Andrew, you're the most important person, please.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Rob and Joy, once again for allowing us to use your facility here and be part of your group. I'd just like to start the meeting by paying respects to my spiritual masters, Bhakti Vijayacharya, Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Narayan Maharaj. Om Agyanatimirandasya Ganamjana Shilakaya Chakshun Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. Offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, to the torchlight of knowledge. So, around about the mid-1960s, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, affectionately known as Srila Prabhupada, left India to come to the United States on the order of his spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta, in order to bring Krishna consciousness to the Western world. And Srila Prabhupada executed the order of his spiritual master beyond imagination. He took on thousands and thousands of disciples, opened hundreds of temples, and wrote more books about love of God than anyone in history. And within a very short time, Hare Krishna was a household name, top of the pops, thanks to George Harrison. And one of the very first disciples initiated by Srila Prabhupada in New York in the West was our very special guest tonight, Jadarani Dasi, also known as Shamarani Dasi. We're very, very fortunate to have her here with us this evening. She not only has been a faithful disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but also her instructing guru, Srila Narayan Maharaj. She has served and is currently serving with great enthusiasm. And as we know, her special service has been devotional art. So, millions of people have been inspired by her pictures in many, many countries around the world, including myself. In the late 1970s, I was living in Hillbrow and first came in touch with the Krishna Consciousness Movement. I got an invitation for a free vegetarian dinner at the temple. So the food got me, food was the first thing. But the second thing that got me was the pictures. And of course, many of those pictures were painted by Shamarani in the books of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, more recently in the books of Srila Narayan Maharaj. So, we are very grateful to Shamarani for bringing us all to Krishna consciousness in that very special way. Because these pictures are not mundane pictures. As we will be seeing this evening, these are pictures of the spiritual world. Very confidential pictures. So she's a very special soul in being able to inspire and touch the hearts of so many people across the world, different languages, different cultures. All of us respond to love. And this love divine is the very essence of the spiritual world. But she's also a Vedic teacher. Teacher of the Vedas, just like Bhagavad Gita. I have some students here today who come to my Bhagavad Gita group. Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate study of the Vedas. Vedas means knowledge. Vedas means complete knowledge. And the essence of those teachings is this book, Bhagavad Gita, which means the Song of God. So Shamarani is a teacher of this Vedic literature as well. And in that Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse which says, Janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo viritatvaraha chakva deham punar janma naitimam ebshyojana, which is Sanskrit. And what it means is that one who knows the transcendental nature of the appearance and pastimes of Krishna does not take birth again in this material world. And those pastimes, those activities of Krishna, these are the paintings which Shamarani paints. These are the paintings which we're going to see this evening. Over 200 of these she has painted over the years, which have appeared in books, calendars, magazines, in temples, around the world. Millions and millions of people have been inspired. So we're extremely fortunate to have her here with us this evening. So when I went along to that little temple in Hilbrow, in the late 1970s, it was the food and the pictures. And I also had a temple president there. His name was Sridhar, American. And he taught me a verse, which I've never forgotten, which comes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the postgraduate study of Vedic science. And it goes like this. Kitanchana smite yasmin duskaram sukaram bhavet vismite viparitam syat sri chaitanyam namamitam. That translated means, things that are very difficult to do become easy to execute if we simply remember Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Gauranga. But if one does not remember him, then even easy things become very difficult. To this Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Gauranga, I offer my respectful obeisances. So, I thought, by the way, Lord Gauranga is Krishna himself. In fact, he's the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. He's called Mahavananyaya, most merciful incarnation. So in this age, we all need his mercy. Undoubtedly, if we need to make spiritual advancement, his mercy is necessary, and you get his mercy through his holy name. So I thought we'd start this evening, before we have the presentation, my camera, with a little mantra yoga, mantra meditation. So if you have a look on the A4 sheets, the one called Happiness Comes From Within, you'll see a Gauranga mantra. That's an A4 sheet. Everyone got that? Everyone hasn't got that. Okay. Well, we'll just have to... No. It goes like this. First word is Shri. Can everyone say Shri?
Shri.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Jai.
Jai.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Gaur.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Nam.
Shri.
Shri.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Jai.
Jai.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Gaur.
Gaur.
Gauranga.
Gauranga.
Nam. So, some of you also know that I'm a singer-songwriter, and I released a few CDs. This is one of them, it's called What's Life Without Love, and we'll play that mantra and just listen to that sound vibration, sing that sound vibration for a few minutes, invoke that spiritual power of Gauranga Nam. By the way, Shamarani gives me very kindly and agreed to let me use one of her pictures on my next CD, which I'm recording. So,
First I offer my humble obeisances and the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipful Viksha Gurudev. Nichalila Pravishta Om Vishnu Pai, as filled to the set of Sri Shimari, Shiva Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. And the same unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipful Shiksha Gurudev. Om Vishnu Pai, as filled to the set of Sri Shimari, Shiva Bhakti Vedanta Narayana Goswami Maharaj. To all of our disciplic succession, and all the assembled devotees. So before the presentation, I was uttering various Sanskrit mantras and prayers to our disciplic succession, starting from our spiritual master and going all the way up the chain of spiritual masters, all the way back to Krishna and his associates, so that they may be pleased with us and bless this congregation and evening, so that we can all experience powerful Krishna consciousness. So this is Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and who, as it was stated earlier, and then in 1966, at Tompkins Square Park in New York City. And this is Srila Bhaktivedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj, my instructing spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada's dearmost friend in this world and successor in spreading his Krishna consciousness mission. And he continued where Srila Prabhupada left off. Srila Prabhupada actually could never leave off, because his books are just like desire trees, being translations and commentaries of the ancient Vedic wisdom, mystical wisdom books of India. And these books are just like desire trees. So as our readiness becomes more and more, the books become more and more deep in granting us the philosophical acumen that we need to become transcendental to all material limitations. Also, the books are compared with time bombs. So they go off in the hands, they explode in the hands of the right person at the right time. And then once you get the book, then it acts like a time bomb again. So today you might read something, and then next year you might read the same thing and get ever fresh, ever new, ever unfolding mysteries of spiritual life. Okay, so this is a picture done under Srila Prabhupada's guidance, very confidential picture of the most elevated transcendentalists named the gopis, cowherd maidens, who are the most elevated in divine Krishna consciousness. When Krishna played his flute on the full moon night of the autumn season, when the whole sky was turned red, they all dropped everything in the middle, milking the cows, dressing, taking care of their families, and they ran to Krishna. So Krishna consciousness movement is like that, that right now we're all in the middle of the illusory conception of life, and when we're fortunate enough to hear Krishna's calling, then at any moment that illusion or dream can be dropped and we can experience our real self beyond the body. This is how I painted before I met Srila Prabhupada. I called it a still life, but actually you can see it's still dead, because it's just dead matter. And then in 1966, in Tompkins Square Park, underneath this very tree, I met Srila Prabhupada. And he was telling everyone, thank you all for participating in the Krishna consciousness movement. This process is very old, very simple, and very sublime. And it goes to the deepest depths of the soul. This is another painting, a still death, that I did before I met Prabhupada. So, as another Bhagavad Guru mentioned in his very beautiful introduction, Krishna consciousness movement is to present as its undergraduate platform the Bhagavad Gita, This is Sanjaya, the secretary of the blind king, Dhritarashtra. And he's telling the king what is happening 90 miles away on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. How Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of his love for his devotee, has become his charioteer. Krishna drives the chariot of our life as soon as we take shelter of him. And he takes responsibility for our every next step. So how is Sanjaya able to see 90 miles away? Because he had a spiritual TV in his heart, which he received from his spiritual master, Śrīla Vyāsadeva, who was the literary incarnation of Krishna, who benedicted him with transcendental knowledge. So when one surrenders to a glorified spiritual master, that transcendental knowledge becomes impregnated in the heart, and we get those same powers. Here is Sri Krishna, Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, the original transcendental truth. Bhagyavan. Bhagya means fortune. So one who has all fortune, namely all beauty, all strength, all wealth, all knowledge, all renunciation, and all fame. We all have some, but he who has all, full, complete, that is God. Van means one who possesses. So Krishna is enlightening. If anybody's just coming in and there's no room, there's a couple of seats right up in front, so you're welcome to come up front here.
Just come on, just go around to the prison, please.
We just come around the side and up front seats for you. So Krishna, the supreme reservoir of all pleasure, is speaking to his friend and relative Arjuna, who's finding himself in a civil war. And when Arjuna sees who's on the battlefield, his cousin brothers, his grandfather, all of his relatives, he begins to lament. He said to Krishna, my limbs are quivering, my lips are drying up, I can no longer even stand up. Because how can I kill my relatives? Even though the relatives on the opposite side, they immorally and illegally usurped the kingdom from Arjuna and his brothers, who were the rightful heirs to the throne of the world. So his duty to the Lord and humanity was to get that kingdom back. So Krishna is telling him that you'll just be an instrument in this war, because by my will, all the enemies are already killed. Krishna revealed his universal form, wherein Arjuna saw millions of suns, millions of moons, his eye being one sun, his other eye being the moon, filled with unlimited demigods and oceans, planets. And Arjuna saw Krishna swallowing in the teeth of that universal form all the enemies, which means everything's already happened. Considering the person who's created time, from his point of view, everything has already happened. You can either choose to be an instrument to illusion, to the deluding potency of nations, or we can choose to be Krishna's potency, Krishna's instrument, which we attain by taking shelter of a bona fide guru and under his guidance chanting the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama. So here Krishna is telling Arjuna, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future will ever any of us cease to be. The impermanent appearance of happiness and distress, and its disappearance in due course is just like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception or origin. They have nothing to do with our real self, so one should learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. And how can we do that? By experiencing a higher realm. Then we can easily tolerate the comings and goings of this illusory low realm. And here's how Sanjaya, who had that spiritual TV in his heart, this is how he got it. This is Vyasa, the literary incarnation of Krishna, who manifested hundreds of thousands of very deep, beautiful wisdom. So here you can see the yellow glow coming from his glance onto the glance of his disciple, for he's giving him divya drishti, or transcendental knowledge. That picture of Srila Vyasadeva was one of the ones I did under Srila Gurudev's direction, just as this one I did under Srila Prabhupada's direction. And if any of you ever try to paint, you know that it's just impossible. Especially if you have to paint the spiritual world and you're just a conditioned soul with imperfect senses, the tendency to make mistakes, to cheat, to be subject to illusion. So I told Srila Gurudev, I feel like I'm painting in the dark. I never know what is the next stroke to make. In fact, every time I make a stroke, I sit and wait, okay, who's going to make the next stroke? And nobody does it. So I have to try and do it, but I feel like I'm painting in the dark. So he said, no, you're painting by mind light. So this is Krishna's teaching this in the Bhagavad Gita. This is the law of karma and reincarnation. Krishna told Arjuna that whatever one thinks of at the time of death, he attains that state without fail. Therefore, O Arjuna, always think of me in the form of Krishna, and thus you'll attain me, certainly. As you've heard in the Bible, as you sow, so shall you reap. So the Vedic literatures, the Bible is considered the pocket dictionary, and the Vedic literatures is considered the collegiate dictionary. There's no contradiction between the pocket dictionary and the collegiate dictionary. Only one has more information. So in the Bible it says, as you sow, so shall you reap. And the Vedas elaborately explain the law of karma and reincarnation. Here are four very simplified examples. Here's a lady on the cover of Exposure Mag. So, although she's in the body of a human being, her consciousness is like that of a tree, because human life is not meant for such exposition, but it's meant for self-realization, which Lord Krishna says himself, one should search for this at every step, in every direction, at all times, should search for that absolute truth. So, she's not doing that. So her consciousness is not like a human being, but like a tree. Because a tree's business is to stand in public naked. So in her next life, in the same position, she gets the body of a tree. Have you ever noticed that trees sometimes look like people posing? Now, in the next, this is all very simplified, because there's tons of things that we do daily, not just one thing. So the combination of the things that we do and the things that we think, the things that we desire, end up making us appear in any one of the 8,400,000 species of life. And we'll show you that picture out there. So here, she loves to sleep, can't get enough of it. So in her next life, because her consciousness is not like that of a human, but like that of a bear who likes to sleep 6 months out of the year, she gets the body of a bear and can actually fulfill her desire.
And this man, he loves to cook or eat meat. So that's not the duty of a human being. A human being is to eat vegetables and also offer those vegetables to the Lord in transcendental sacrifices. You'll be very happily experiencing at the end of the program. You'll be tasting Krishna prasadam, or food that was made with love and devotion to Krishna for his pleasure, and then offered to him with the appropriate Vedic mantras. Then God himself will blow these universes away in the spiritual world. He actually comes and tastes that prasadam, and then what we get is his remnants. So our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada once said, back in his first temple of 1966, even an atheist can taste the difference between an offered chapati and an unoffered chapati. So in his next life, he becomes a tiger, but he doesn't even have to wait to cook. Everything's right there for the taking. And in the last box, the man is just like totally without any discrimination. Eggs, lobsters. Sometimes you see in, I used to live in America, and in California they have this place on the ocean, like a living restaurant where the fish and the lobsters and crabs would live there, and then they would cook them alive right in front of the people. And then you'd hear them screaming like a siren. So, no discrimination, so no problem. That's what you want. So Krishna's agents arrange that human life is not meant for that. So here, take the body of a pig where you can happily eat up the stool with no problem. So this is the law of karma and reincarnation. It may sound not nice to hear, but it's better to hear it and avoid it than be in it. So in that connection, Srila Prabhupada tells a story, a very funny story, of a priest who went to a miner's town, and he said, gather all the miners together, and he said, so you should all worship Jesus Christ. They'd never heard of Jesus Christ before. So one of them called out, who's he? What's his number? Because they thought he was one of the miners. So then the priest said, no, you don't understand. Jesus Christ is God, and you should worship him. Well, what if we don't? Well, if you don't, then you go to hell. Oh, really? What's hell like? Well, it's very damp and dark. And they said, well, we're already working in the mines. What's the difference? So the priest said, let's see. There's no newspapers. Oh, no, let's worship Jesus Christ. So he created a fearful situation. Why? In order to save them from a more fearful situation. Okay. So, this is a lady, and she's playing the birdcage. And it's a very lovely birdcage made of gold. It doesn't look like the gold birdcage made of gold, the bird very happy. Why? Because she's cleaning the birdcage, but she forgot to feed the bird. So the cage is this body, and the bird within is our crying out soul, that the bird is crying out, quack, what about me? But she's not hearing at all. So that lady represents our bodily absorption, bodily concept of life. The bird cage represents the body, and the bird is our lovely soul within, calling out, calling out. And when that bird calls out so much, then Krishna sends a bona fide spiritual master. In our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada's offering to his Gurudev in 1936, he said something very poetic and at the same time very deep. That this body, I'm sorry, the cage is meant for the undoing of the bird, not that the bird is meant for the upkeep of the cage. Get it? The cage is meant for the undoing of the bird. The bird is not meant for the upkeep of the cage. He has another business. And the cage is meant to trap him. And another, that this body is just like a poisoned shirt, who is never meant, which is a poisoned shirt meant for the death of the wearer, who is never meant for wearing the shirt. So here's the king below, and he's the richest man in the world, gets everything he wants. One servant is giving him peeled grapes, another one fanning him, but he's not happy at all, because his soul inside is not getting what it needs. It needs spiritual nourishment. It needs hearing the Lord's glories, reading the Lord's glories. And incidentally, we have some very, very beautiful books. And Ananda Bhartika will tell you about the most recently published magical book that's been published in the entire universe. Later on in the program, he'll tell you about that. And this is Bhagavad Gita, which I hope that everyone who already hasn't gotten one will kindly take one for your transcendental happy upliftment. Because the soul is meant to be unlimited in bliss, unlimited in life, and unlimited in knowledge. Eternity, full of bliss and full of knowledge. That's our natural right. And we can do that by this Krishna conscious process. So here, as I promised, there's a cycle of birth and death in the 8,400,000 species of life. Why are we telling first about the material world? Because we're trying to create a platform. Because in a few minutes, we'll be telling you about the very, very deep philosophy and the transcendental, confidential paintings that Ananda Bhartika mentioned earlier. So to get us ready, to get us free from bodily conception, we're doing the basic platform first. So the lady represents birth. The skeleton obviously represents death. The infinity sign, this one I did around 1980. The infinity sign represents the endless pain of the endless chain of birth, old age, disease, and death, which really have nothing to do with us. And all those white stars in there, in the universe, represent the unlimited universes that we're all traveling through in different species of life. The Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Ekupe Brahmanda Bhomite Komya Bhagyavanadhi Guru Krishna Prashade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. The living entities are wandering through innumerable universes in the 8,400,000 species of life, just like one who's on a ferris wheel, going up to the heavenly planets, down to the harsh planets, and all the places in between. And then, when one has performed meritorious spiritual works for many millions of births, at that time, Krishna arranges that he be a bona fide spiritual master. Now, I know you won't believe this, but this is the first time I ever said to my traveling assistant and associate, Visanti, take a picture of this audience, because it's a really far out, amazing, very high audience. So you've all been through many millions of births of this superti, your spiritual pious credits, knowingly or unknowingly, that you're what you are and where you are now. And here is the spiritual master and the disciple. In the heart of the spiritual master is Krishna himself, the Lord of all existence, in the form of the super soul, the size of the thumb in his four-handed form, is responsible for all of our forgetting and remembering, knowledge and forgetfulness. And he also awards the results of our activities in our next life. So he's trying to talk to us all the time, but in our conditioned stage, in our limited consciousness, we can't hear. So Krishna manifests externally, he manifests internally as the super soul, and externally as the bona fide self-realized spiritual master. And you notice that the Lord in the heart there, he has one hand up, like he's saying something. And the spiritual master also has his hand up, meaning that he's telling us exactly what God himself wants to tell us, like a conduit that this the word is for. Is that the right word?
Conduit.
And then the Lord is in the heart of the disciple, but the disciple can't hear. So he's hearing it from the external manifestation. This process is very simple, the process of Krishna consciousness, simply chanting Hare Krishna, eating Krishna Prasada, reading about Krishna, singing his glories, and sharing it with others. There's no not giving up what one is doing, but just adding Krishna consciousness. Just like I was an artist when I met Srila Prabhupada. So I didn't give that up, but I added Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, and I was such a bad artist too. Prabhupada said, in the beginning she could not paint, but by the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, the talent came out. And he also told one of my godmothers, who said, how can I paint like Jadavani? And Prabhupada said, I have taught her how to paint. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So this painting is a painting of Krishna's bird carrier, giant bird carrier named Garuda. And I don't know if you can see it, maybe Sandy can show with her little pointer. There's a little sparrow there. So before Garuda came, the sparrow had laid its eggs on the ocean. And then, as oceans do, the wave came in and swallowed up the eggs. So the sparrow, you can imagine, the little baby, she's at her wit's end, begging, demanding that ocean to give me back my eggs. The ocean simply laughed. So the sparrow said, well, if you don't give me back my eggs, then I'm going to drink you up until I find my eggs. So the ocean laughed even more. But because of her great determination, Krishna sent his own bird carrier, who threatened, if you don't give my little sister back her eggs, then I will swallow you. So the ocean immediately returned the eggs. So God helps those who help themselves. If we simply make an endeavor in this right divine direction, then Krishna personally sends all help. And how powerful is he that he can help us? This is the original form of Krishna. In his transcendental planet, which is the source of innumerable spiritual planets. That planet is called Goloka Vrindavan, where every step is a dance, every word is a song, and where the ground is made of touchstones. Then Krishna's part of a part of a part of a part of a part, five times removed, plenary expansion, is Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu lies down in the ocean of cause, which is in between the spiritual world and the material world. And from his breathing and from the pore holes of his body emanate innumerable universes. Then when he breathes in, they all again enter them. So we may think, oh God, what a long day it is today. But a day of Brahma is trillions of years. And a lifetime of Brahma is trillion of years times 100 years times trillions of years. And at the end of every lifetime of Brahma, Lord Mahavishnu inhales. And then again, after that expanse of time, we exhale. So the universe is going in and out like that. We've been through it many millions of times because we've all been around since the beginning of time, we're all eternal. But we forgot, because that's the nature of the deluding potency of Maya. So we can get beyond all that by the simple process of Krishna consciousness. Then, in that divine state, the devotee sees, and he's wearing the usual monk robes, but it really doesn't matter what you wear. You can wear anything, because the clothes don't make the consciousness. We dress like this because it helps in presentation. If anybody sees me, they can know to come up, hey, I have a question about Krishna. But otherwise, in our daily affairs, we can dress anywhere, any way, and the soul can develop and develop. So he's seen in every living entity, the tiger, the peacock, the trees, the birds, the fish, the human beings. He's seeing that super soul in the heart, and he's seeing the individual atomic soul, who is by nature eternal, full of bliss, and full of knowledge. In our liberated soul, in our liberated state, there's not one moment of unhappiness, and every moment is a brand new experience, newer than the previous moment. Here in this world, everything starts new and fresh, like a newspaper, for example. You see, on the first day, everybody's holding the newspapers in their chests, running home. And by the third or fourth day, the newspaper goes on the floor for when one's painting the walls. It's old news. But when one has divine spiritual consciousness, every moment becomes newer than the previous moment, and every moment is unfolding ever freshness. And here's our instructing spiritual master, Srila Gurudev, guiding me on the paintings. I think the sun is trying to tell us that from this point, we'll be showing you the posters, slides of the posters that we have here, that you're welcome to take home with you. This is Srila Viswanath Chakrabarti Thakur. He is a very great sage in self-realized soul. In the spiritual world, he is a maidservant of Krishna's pleasure potency, his intrinsic, complete power, Srimati Radhika. Just like we say in this world, behind every great man is a great woman. So even behind God, there's a great woman. And that is Srimati Radhika. So this is Srila Viswanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who's written many commentaries to the Vedic literatures, many of which have been translated and are on the tables here. And in his Siddhadeya, or spiritually perfected form, in the spiritual world, he's a maidservant. You'll see on the table here at the end that there's a painting, a poster of Radha and Krishna with four of their divine maidservants serving them. To change the atmosphere of any house, Srila Prabhupada said that these pictures are like windows to the spiritual world. They are just like the rain after the drought of mundane art, and everyone will be attracted. This one is called Manani Radha. Man means transcendental, loving, jealous anger, or sulky mood. Why do we have so many emotions in this world? The reason is that everything has its origin. Janma yasyataha is a very nice verse, the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita. Janma yasyataha vaya itiratas jatin sabhikyan sara. Tene brahma vidaya yadivalaye oyanti apisuraya tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo yatrachishabha vishaya. everything rests and within whom everything is dissolved at the end of creation. So all emotions have their source and perfection in that absolute truth. All the emotions that we feel here, anxiety, grief, loss, hope, anticipation, all those feelings are not our feelings. They're not the feelings of the soul. Therefore, they're transient and they don't do anything for the soul. But we have real ecstatic transcendental emotions that evolve at the beginning at the stage of Bhava Bhakti, the stage of devotional service, when transcendental emotions manifest in the heart. It's already there. Our divine consciousness is already within us, but the process of Krishna consciousness brings that out. Just like walking is inherent in a person, in a human being. It's not inherent in a horse, so when you go to the circus and you see the horse is walking, you can only do it for a second. Very artificial. But for us it's natural. So when you have a little baby and the mother takes the two hands of a two-year-old and goes like this to train him walking, it gradually can't walk because walking is natural. So ecstatic emotions, sublime divine feelings, are actually ours inherently, and it's brought out by the process of Krishna consciousness. And having these pictures and meditating on them and chanting to the pictures, or even just looking at them and letting the pictures reveal themselves, is one of the processes. So Radharani is feeling man or sulking mood because Krishna has done some wrong. So Krishna is coming to beg forgiveness, and she's playing hard to get. And so Krishna is trying harder, and that gives them both intense ecstasy, increases their ecstasy millions of times. Here in the material world, happiness and distress are both varieties of distress. Like suppose it's really cold winter, it's freezing, it's a blizzard. Run in the house and close the door. Phew, that feels good. It's just a temporary relief. It's not really positive happiness. But there in the spiritual world, both unhappiness and happiness are both parts of transcendental ecstasy. So here, Krishna is so much in love with Radha, his feminine counterpart, and we are part and parcel of Radha and Krishna. That's what it has to do with us. Just like we read so many love stories, but it doesn't have anything to do with us, except maybe bring back old sad memories. But because we, the soul, are part of Radha and Krishna, just like my hand is part of my body, this information is all in the Vedic literatures. So just simply by hearing about them revives our divine consciousness, and we can gradually begin to share in their divine bliss. So Krishna is always trying to taste Radharani's love, and he goes through all means to do it. Even in order to break her mind, he disguises himself here as a singer from Mathura. Radharani is in Vrindavan, that is the spiritual abode. But that spiritual abode is manifest in India, 4 hours from Delhi, in a divine land that's descended from the spiritual world called Vrindavan. And we invite you all to come to Vrindavan, especially during the month of Karti, early October to early November. Ananda Varnaprabhu and the other devotees can tell you more details, or you can go on purebhakti.com website and get the details from there. And we'll take care of you once you're there. There's 30 days of doing parikrama in all the holy places where Krishna himself personally performed his pastimes 5,000 years ago. And in his unmanifest situation, that is still going on, but we can't see it with our bare eyes, his transcendental pastimes are still going on there. And every speck of dust there is made of Chintamani stone, which is more than a touchstone. Touchstone, anything that you touch to that stone turns to gold. But Chintamani is anything you desire from that stone, you get that wish fulfilled. So every atom of dust in Vrindavan is made of Chintamani, wish fulfilling stone, or the philosopher's gem. So we invite you all to come. There's chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophizing throughout the day and evening, dramas, big festivals. It's an unforgettable, life-transforming experience. So we invite you to all come. So here Krishna has come from Mathura, which is about half hour or an hour from Vrindavan. And he's in the disguise as a girl singer. And Radharani asks him to sing, not recognizing him. So he sings so sweetly, like the most beautiful goddess. And then her heart melts and she begins to weep. And all of her friends begin to weep. And thus her sulky mood goes away. So this is the two-in-one absolute truth, like one stem and two flowers, blue and yellow, or one candle and two wicks, two wicks and two flames. So again, Krishna is disguising himself. We also have this poster here, but only one, I think. Krishna is disguising himself as a demigoddess from the heavenly planets, and covering her face and wearing a beautiful pink garment, Krishna comes very sad to the house of Radharani when her parents are away, and tells her how terrible Krishna is, how he has millions of lovers, and he always leaves one for another, and Radharani's love is so pure, she should just give him up. So Radharani proceeds then to open up her treasure chest of love, her love locket, and describe to Krishna all about the nature of her pure love and the nature of Krishna's pure love for her. Why did he have to disguise himself to hear that? Because she would never tell him directly. Because the nature of love is that it's indirect. As soon as I say, I love you, my love goes down. Therefore, in very tricky ways, they talk to each other. Our Srila Gurudev compared this with having a camphor. Camphor, you know, that white square. When camphor burns by a doorway, by an open doorway, the beautiful aroma evaporates into nowhere. But if that door is closed, then the intensity of the brilliant aroma increases and increases and becomes more and more condensed and sweet. So when praying or pure love is kept inside the heart without directly speaking it, but by speaking it indirectly, then it grows and grows, and that's how all the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are. So we'll be able to learn that divine language of love also during this process of Krishna consciousness. This also, we have here a wall, and this is called Jai Sri. Jai means spiritual victory, and Sri means Srimati Radhika. Sri means beauty or opulence. All opulences are present in Srimati Radhika, and it's because of her that Krishna is God, because she's his power. She's his Sri. Like when we say, Jai Sri Krishna. Sri means Srimati Radhika. And because of her, therefore he's Bhagavan. She is Sarva Lakshmi Mayi. That means she is the embodiment of God's opulences. Beauty, wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. So here, although they're one, they separate into two to enjoy pastimes. And here, the pastimes of the spiritual world are reflected in this material world in a vitiated way, just like a very beautiful tree full of fruits and flowers is reflected in a muddy river. In a muddy river, everything is made of muddy water. First of all, everything is upside down. The roots are up, the branches are down, and the fruits and flowers and leaves are all made of muddy water. So if I go to try, oh, I'll get that fruit. Oh, it was just muddy water. Oh, let me take that fragrant flower. Oh, it was just muddy water. And that's why we're always so frustrated in this material world. It's like I have food in my pocket, and I'm expected to enjoy the food in my pocket. Because this body is just like a coat, and the mind is just like a shirt and a coat, it's not us. So the origin of pure love is here. So they're one, but they become two through transcendental pastimes. So in their pastimes, Radharani is married to another coward boy. So she's going to fetch water in the river, and then Krishna just, quote unquote, just happens to be there and says to her, oh, I see that you have two big heavy pots. Can I help you with one? And she says, no, thank you. I have chased wife and you're just a devotee. I will not speak with you. And that increases Krishna's desire for amorous sports more and more, that increases his ecstasy more and more. Like when a girl plays hard to get, that's a reflection of how it is in the absolute. But there everything is perfect, full of bliss, full of knowledge, and eternal. Every moment being a new experience. And this is vain heat, which you'll also see on the wall. Every day, Krishna goes out cowherding. Although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he owns everything. Everything emanates from his simple wish. God said, let there be creation, and there was creation. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Still, in his highest feature, he likes to forget that he's God. And he likes to take the role of a coward boy, a transcendental coward boy. And he goes out every day cowherding. And the gopis, Radharani and her expansions, are all coward maidens. So they're in their home. Remember in the beginning I told you about Sanjaya, who was given transcendental knowledge, a spiritual TV in his heart, so he's able to see everything past, present, and future. And he was able to see the battlefield of Kurukshetra 90 miles away and relate to the blind king what was going on the battlefield. So Sanjaya has like one atom of the power of these gopis. The gopis are in their homes and they're meditating on Krishna out in the forest, lamenting that we have to stay home and take care of our households when all the forest creatures are so much more fortunate than us. Like, for example, the deer are so fortunate that their husbands realize that they're better than their husbands because they're running towards Krishna and share loving glances with Krishna. And their husbands follow along. And our husbands, if they know we're going out to be with Krishna, they're ready to meet us. So we're not so fortunate. And we're not so fortunate as the rivers in Vrindavan. Because you see, when Krishna plays his flute, the rivers start flowing backwards and they make whirlpools of ecstatic, uncontrolled love. And with their waves, they hold up a lotus flower to offer to the lotus feet of Krishna. So all the residents of Vrindavan are much more fortunate than us. And then, look at the cows. The cows were eating. By the way, these cows in Vrindavan are called wish-fulfilling cows. They're not like the mundane cows of this world. Although the mundane cows of this world are our mother, just like the mother feeds us her breast milk, so the cow also feeds us her breast milk. So therefore, in Indian Vedic culture, we say Gomata, or mother cow. But still, the cows here are not like the cows in the spiritual world, because the cows in the spiritual world are the embodiment of all Vedic knowledge, and they give an unlimited supply of nectar-like milk. So the cows were chewing their grasses, but as soon as they heard the enchanting flute playing Krishna, immediately their ears, and Srila Gurudev, who posed for a lot of these paintings, Srila Prabhupada also posed once for Krishna, for one of the drawings I was doing. So Gurudev also posed for a lot of the paintings. So he also posed for the cows, and he made like his ears go up. So the ears of the cows become like cups to drink in the nectar from the flute playing in Krishna. And so you see the grass in their mouth is neither falling down, nor are they able to swallow it. It's just hanging there. And they take Krishna through the cups of their ears into their hearts and embrace him there, just like mothers. So this flute playing that you're hearing now is a reflection of Krishna's flute playing. In 1966, somebody asked our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, why is Krishna blue? So Prabhupada answered, why is the sky blue? And they didn't know. So Prabhupada said, the sky is a reflection of Krishna's body. Just as when one comes out into the daytime, like today, it was such a beautiful day, just to walk out into it was made you feel so good. So that's because this situation of today's beautiful weather and clear blue sky is a reflection of the blue, fresh rain cloud colored body of Krishna. How much pleasure everybody feels in his association. So the gopis are thinking about this, and they're lamenting that we can't get out of the house. And they're singing very beautiful verses called Venu Geet, the glorification of Krishna's flute song, singing verses like Barahapitam Madhavarapu Karnayo Karnikarum Vibhatavasam Kanaka Kapisam Vajranti Chamalam Randrana Venu Rajana Sudaya Apurayana Gopa Vrindai Vrindaranya Swaparamanam Pravashadhyaya Kirti. You're describing Krishna as he's out in the forest, wearing peacock feathers in his hair, playing the flute, and filling up the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips. The same lips that kiss the gopis, the same lips that speak all the Vedic literatures, are the lips that pour the nectar into the flute playing that enchants all fortunate living entities. And they're describing how he has certain impressions in his feet, like he just have lines, but he has all different shapes, like lotus flowers, barleycorns, thunderbolts, all kinds of very amazing things, conch shells, and then those imprints go all over the floor, so all over the ground of Vrindavan. So the gopis are lamenting into their songs, and they go so deep into absorption of their songs that they actually enter into their songs. And because they're singing about Vrindavan forest, and the songs about Krishna are absolute, Krishna's description is actually Krishna himself. To describe the glory of Vrindavan is not different from Vrindavan itself, if that glorification is coming from the Vedic scriptures and not my imagination. If the mantras are coming from the Vedic scriptures and not my imagination, then they are reality themselves coming in the form of a mantra. Let's take an example that's very easy to understand. You all have cell phones, right? And you all have loved ones on the other side of the city sometimes, on the other side of the country sometimes. And you just have this little piece of plastic. And just by the sound of your beloved's voice, there they are, aren't they? So if it's possible, just in this ordinary human situation, how much possible it is for God and His abode and His pastimes to be non-different from their transcendental sound vibration. God is absolute. If I say apple, 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 or cake, 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 it's not going to be there unless I'm hungry and hungry. But if I say Krishna, 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 although He's the source of innumerable universes, that very same Krishna, because He's not different from His name, is absolute one without a second. He's there dancing in my tongue. So therefore the process of Krishna consciousness is very simple and sublime. So the gopis became one with their mantras by absorption. And they ended up in the forest, stealthily sharing glances that you can see. Radha and Krishna are stealing glances at each other. And Balaram, in the front, Krishna's older brother, is hurrying with the older coward boys because they know that Radha and Krishna want to stealthily look at each other with sidelong glances. So, what is the moral of the story? It's not a symbolic story, it's real, it's reality. But it also has a moral, and that is, if we become absorbed in our bhajans and kirtans, then we also enter into the reality of that. The gopis are the best bhajaniyas. They teach us how to do bhajan and kirtan with full absorption. And actually both Prabhupada and Gurudev have said that real kirtan is weeping kirtan. Weeping from the heart, that I'm suffering in this material world. Please pick me up, just like a child crying for the mother. And then Radha and Krishna pick us up from this ocean of dimensions. And this is called Save a Clinch. We also have that poster here, along with their four maidservants. And this is the very, very highest feature of God, called Radha Nath. Where's Radha Nath? Where are you? You're mm-hmm. the back, aren't you? Can you move over there? Mm-hmm. That's Radha Nath Das. He was named after Radha Nath. For the Radha Nath. So Radha Nath, Nath means Lord. And Radha means He whose Lord is Radha. So Krishna's highest feature, the highest feature of the absolute truth, is that He wants to be a servant of Radharani. So He's called Gopinath, He whose Lord is the Gopis, and Radhanath, Radhakant. And here He is begging Srimati Radhika that I know I did something wrong. Please forgive me and please be merciful. Place your feet on my head and relieve me of my burning separation from you. Look, I even put my prized possession, my flute, at your feet. What more can I give to show you my full surrender to you? So Srila Gurudev wants this picture in the heart of everyone. Whether it is in Sanskrit it says nastik or astik. Whether he's atheist or theist, religious or not religious, LSD taker, wine taker, meat butcher, murderer, everyone should get a picture, and it purifies his existence no matter what disqualification one has. And therefore these pictures and the books make the best presents for bar mitzvahs, births, birthdays, anniversaries, housewarmings, just if you like someone, newborn baby time, and so on. We have to get pictures all throughout the year, so these make the best ones, because they purify the whole house. Okay. Is that the end? Sorry? Srimati Radhika. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, who appeared here 500 years ago, in the mood and complexion of Srimati Radhika, came to this world to give the living entities, the fortune of living entities, what no other incarnation or acharya, spiritual master, ever gave before, since the previous day of Brahma, trillions of years before, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. And that is, he came to give the service of the mantras to Srimati Radhika. So, Srila Gurudev often says we're very fortunate to have come on this line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within the line of Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to make a little announcement that we have what's called, I guess, the light. Any questions or comments?